we have a roll call. Supervisor Grady is excused. We have everyone here, but we have one you can notice.
We have two.
Two.
Someone in the face?
I was shaking out of hand a little while ago. So we're all here except for Supervisor Grady, as far as the roll call. Rule of the minutes of the previous meeting, if the committee received those, had time to go over, I would ask for a motion to approve.
Move to approve, second.
Moved by Supervisor Blackham, second by Supervisor Wambo to approve. Any discussion? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Any supervisors' comments, youth and governance comments before the meeting this evening? If not, I see that we are going to have citizens' comments, and I'm just going to make a comment before that. If you are commenting on the stop sign at the Colony House, and if you are commenting on the Bristol Town Hall, please know, and I'm sure by the correspondence here, that what our stance is on these. We are very much in favor of the Bristol Town Hall, and we are we've sent to Salem Lakes where we stand on the stop sign. So what I'm getting at here is do not spend a lot of time trying to convince us of something that you know where we sit. With that, we're going to move to citizens' comment. Any citizen that wishes to speak would have 5 minutes to address the committee. And for our records, we just ask that you give your name and address. So any citizens' comments? Yes, sir.
John McCabe, 911 560th Ave in Bristol. I'm going to make it very short. We're here for the Bristol Town Hall to support us. We've got about 6 or 7 people here, and I'm glad you're in favor of it. And when you guys vote on it, it would be okay if you took a picture of it.
The town hall or us?
No, you guys. We've got a picture of the hall.
We're in favor.
Very good. Well, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Patrick Casey, Village Administrator, Salem Lakes. Just to make sure that you all got the correspondence that we sent, and we'll be listening when we discuss the item.
Yes. We emailed it to everyone today, and then they all have hard copies. That thank you for bringing.
Thank you.
Any other citizens' comments? Yes, sir.
Bill Dizicki, 299-20 102nd Street, Trevor. Just want to thank Mr. Abakwa for the study on Jason Broccoli. Sometimes these requests for whether it's speed limits or stop signs are fraught with politics and self-interest, and I it's nice to see studies that are done that are that can push away some of it. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other citizens' comments? If not, we will move on, and we are going to go to Clement Burke here, Highway Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start with the resolutions. The first one is the resolution designating the week of April 9th through April 13th, 2018 as a Work Zone Awareness Week. This came as a request from the Wisconsin Highway County Association, requesting that we should dedicate the week of April 9th through 13th as a Work Zone Awareness Week. And included in the package, you had some data indicating why, and this is actually in at least majority of the states in the country are doing this, and they're just like asking us to be part of it. So with your permission, if with your vote, yes, if it's approved, there are certain things that we'll be putting in place, some publications, to try to make the county aware of work zone safety.
So, is there any questions? Ray and I talked about this at our pre-meeting meeting last week, and neither of us remember us doing this one before. But it's naturally very important, and the work zone problems are well documented. So, if we can support this, if we could have a motion to approve this resolution, we will go on record as supporting.
So moved.
Moved by Supervisor Gilmore, seconded by Supervisor O'Day. Any discussion? If not, Human Governance, all in favor?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, Clement.
Second resolution is a request to authorize the Director of Highways or the Highway Commissioner to apply for a transportation alternative program grants for the construction of a multi-use path. The county is applying. They would like to apply for grants to construct a multi-use trail, which is consistent with a comprehensive plan, county comprehensive bike plan, and as the package requires that it should include a resolution from the county board to support the program before they can review the application and ultimately approve it if meet all the requirements. So today we are requesting for your support. If you give us the support, then we've applied for the grant, but we need the support to make the document complete.
Well, any questions? This would be an 80-20, I believe, right?
Yes.
80-20 grants, naturally with any grant. If we are awarded these, we do not have to accept or spend. This is working on the areas and the designated areas from that comprehensive bike plan that Clement discussed from, I don't know how many years ago that was adopted. Nothing here is new, and some of this is very much needed, and I know one is very much needed for water control. So is there any questions for Clement on that? Yes, Supervisor Bostrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of these proposed bike paths and off-road paths are going to be within the current right-of-ways or property that we already own. The question that is what I'm asking is, do we need to make any property acquisition for any of these?
I would say some areas might require right-of-way acquisition, but majority of it will be within the county right-of-way, highway right-of-way.
And would these grants pay for any of those property acquisitions, or would that be things that we already have budgeted for under the bike plan?
Typically, the grants do not pay for right-of-way acquisition.
What do they pay for?
They pay for the design and the construction.
So what you're telling me is that there may be some right-of-way acquisitions that are necessary, but we don't have that currently budgeted?
No, we do not. We actually budget them if the grant is approved. We don't budget prior to the grant approval.
Not even a back of the napkin, a kind of ballpark kind of thing, this might cost X? I mean, is there any idea of what some of these acquisitions may cost?
Yeah, if we go with specific locations, we can get a ballpark. But with right-of-way, as you would know, it's a guess. Things can happen during construction or during the execution of the project, especially during design. But generally, we have a ballpark of what the right-of-way will cost. If we have to do, if we have to go through the process, yes, we'll have to do it.
So, you have a ballpark idea now, or when you go through the process,
we do that's have, what you're going to come we up do with? Have a ballpark prior to the, yes, we do have a ballpark.
Okay, so what is that?
I don't have it on top of me, on top of my head, but if you need,
I would be curious to know how much in the way of property acquisition we may think we have to do. You don't have to answer this now, because that's not going to sway whether I vote for this or not, because I think this is a good thing that we're doing, but I would like to know how much in the way of right-of-way acquisition we think we may have to do to complete this project, and a guess at what we may have to budget for in the future.
Yes, I'll be able to provide you with information. I do have it, but I don't have the numbers upstairs.
That's fine. Thank you.
Anything else for Clement? One thing we will see this again, if we apply here, this will come back to us for acceptance and the allocation and budgeting. So this committee and the county board, this one goes to the finance committee also, can say no once we would find out final numbers.
So, yes. So just so I'm clear, this is more of a preliminary type of vote.
Yes.
This does affect my district, and I am in favor of it, but that was a very good question, I think, asked of property acquisition, how much this will cost. So since we will be revisiting it again, we right. still have the opportunity to say no if we move forward at this time. That's what I'm hearing.
Right.
Okay.
And the majority of this, and Ray and I talked about this last week, the majority of this is within the right-of-way. There's a couple little spots.
Yeah, I was going to add that is one of the variables in here is the design, because when we look at these projects at this stage, we obviously don't dive really deep into them. We develop, work with a consultant to develop a cost estimate, but there's going to be design variables that will, we always do it in a way that we minimize the need to purchase additional right-of-way. We always want to do it within the existing right-of-way. Sometimes it's just not possible given wetland considerations, the way properties are carved up and whatever, but that's typically, but my point is that the design, once we, if we get the grant, then we really dive into what design options we've got so we can minimize and come up with the best path to minimize right-of-way acquisition.
Okay, thanks.
And there is one in here that the majority of the neighbors said no, but then when they heard that we're gonna be doing some drainage corrections there, which is curb and gutter and stuff, everybody got real interested because they all have water problems. So it happens that way. Again, this is preliminary. This is actually permission to apply.
That's it exactly. Okay. Yeah, permission to apply.
So if I could have motions to have that,
I'll move.
Supervisor Wambo, seconded by Supervisor Gilmore, to give Clement and the administration permission to apply for these grants. You, the governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay.
Sometime last year, we got a resolution from the village of Salem Lakes, and I think the village board resolved in I think on August 21st of 2017, requesting that the county carry out an all-way stop study at the intersection of County Trunk Highway JF and Rock Lake Road. And in the process of that, we've done we've done the all-way study and presented to you. So today, the Department of Public Works is presenting that report, what our findings were. And I believe we all have the copy of the report. And basically, it was determined from that study that and always stop, the standards for always stops when we're not met. So that was basically the request to find out whether that intersection meets four-way stop warrants. And if, again, it was determined from the study that the always stop signs requirements were not met. We also did some further, you know, safety review at the intersections and had some recommendations, which were to probably install a crosswalk. Again, I just want to make it clear that those are just recommendations. We're not asking you to the village to do it. But since we got the resolution from the village, so we are responding to the village. If the village would like to install a crosswalk, that would improve safety. And the crosswalk would also means that we have to have all the necessary crosswalk support system that is required for that location. And we also observed that there was some sight distance issues at the intersection because of on-street parking. And so the county is also recommending that the village might also request and ask the county to you know, restrict some parking, on-street parking, to improve sight distance at that location. Everything is explained in the report, so those were the findings, and we would like to present it here to the board, and if the board reviews it and finds it okay, then we would like to then forward the report to the village as our response.
So this afternoon, well, I believe you all got this in your packet as far as Clement's study, and then this afternoon you may have gotten the email from Salem Lake response, and if not, you do have a copy. Does everyone have one of these hard copies of their okay in front of you, which basically is in concurrence with what Clement had recommended. As far as an agreement there. So if Clement had come up with the recommendation, we'd have a resolution here to change things, which we don't. So we have nothing to vote on. In a rare instance here this evening, I will allow, say, Mr. Casey or someone from Salem Lakes, if there's something that they would like to say about this at this time. I think it's fairly clear. So,
yeah, if it's my understanding, you're not going to vote on a recommended, I'm satisfied. Okay.
Any other questions for Clement on this from the committee? If not, yes.
How much does it cost? Like a sign with a beacon and a crosswalk with a paint cost?
With the sign and a beacon, it could range depending on what kind of signs you, because signs vary. But I would say, don't quote me on it, though, but I would say roughly about $5,000 to $7,000. Just to give you more information, initially we used to recommend the flat flashing lights, but they are not recommended under the METC. The METC is our standard book like that we use, and so we have to use the round, which is cheaper, which is better because it's cheaper. So I'll put the price around $5,000 to $7,000.
And the other thing is, there's all different forms of liability that you assume when you decide I'm going to put up a sign like that. Since something doesn't meet warrants for a stop sign, say the town wants to assume and put up that crosswalk, then they're saying we're allowing people to cross here in a 35 mile an hour zone or wherever they would decide to put it. So there's a lot of legalities, and if it does not meet warrants, and I've done this now for years, and I remember how Mr. Sipsma did it, Clement does it the same way, you're taking a big chance, you know, if you make those changes. And I did. And now I'm putting one of my old rules, because I'm lengthening the meeting here, but I did have dinner there two Fridays ago, and I'll be damned. You walk out of there, there's people parked up to the stop signs, you have a hard time getting your car, it's a mess. And the parking lot that they own is empty. So I'm not making comments on that, but I mean, people choose to just pack all around the place and make a mess out of it. So we came to a good, solid conclusion, and Salem Lakes is in concurrence with us. Anything else for Clement on that one? If not, we'll move on. Thank you, Clement. I think that's all you have, right?
Well, I still have my...
Oh, division report. Yes. We're not trying to rush you.
Again, my divisional report is a little bit outdated, and as you can see with the weather today, it shows that the prediction, the forecast I gave you was not accurate, but it's one of those things that with weather changes. So the department is actually, our division is actually going to have the ongoing general winter maintenance operation is going smoothly. There was no inclement weather forecast in 2 weeks, but unfortunately there's one tonight. So that information is not accurate. Again, everything is moving smoothly, and we hope we'll have a smooth finish with the weather maintenance. And then the county received a request from the Village of Somers Board of Trustees to reduce the speed limit on County Trunk Highway A from the West Frontage Road to County Trunk Highway E. The village is concerned about the additional construction traffic that will be coming up very soon with the developments that is going to be taking place in that area. And they are particularly concerned about the agricultural traffic that during the planting season and the harvest season, and what will happen with the traffic. And so the county is in the process of initiating a speed study to see if we could, whether reducing the speed limit is warranted. Also, the county is also working with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation to make sure that when they're doing their traffic management plan, the agricultural traffic should also be taken into consideration. That way they can take care of they can manage the traffic of the construction and the agricultural traffic properly. And then the next thing was the county also, we just talked about the always stop sign, that was the next point. Now reporting on projects, County Trunk Highway S project, the county design consultant continues to put together documents required for the compiling of the concurrent use. I know we were talking about the concurrent use last time. The consultant plans to complete compiling the documents and submitting the concurrent use permit to the city by the end of this week. Now we have to submit it to the city because it is the city that's actually supposed to submit it to FAA, not the county. So that's why we have to submit it to the city. We are hoping that by the end of this week, all the documents will be submitted to the city. I mean, submitted to the cities. The next project is the Pike River Trail project. The project is on schedule. The contractor has completed 70% of the pile foundations for the boardwalk and have actually started part of the boardwalk this week. They're shooting for completion by Memorial Day. DOT projects, the only DOT project around is now is the Foxconn. Most of the activities happening are north of KR, which is actually in WC, but it started spilling over to the county, and they're just doing relocation work, utility relocation work. Hopefully, you start seeing some construction work in the county maybe in April, May. We don't have a definite timetable schedule for now, but we're thinking it's going to happen in May based on the schedule that was given to us, which I partially put, selectively put what we, how it's going to be impacting the county on the backside of the report. And this schedule is, again, is very tentative. It will be changing based on the program and of course, weather. And we'll be updating the committee as the schedule changes. That's all I have for today.
Any questions for Clement? Thank you very much, Clement. We will move on to Parks, Matt Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I want to thank you folks that are going to be headed out for being here. Thank you very much.
The first two items I have in front of you are letters to finance. These are actually going to be voting items to our finance committee, but they're brought in front of this committee as an informational purpose if there's any comment, question, or concerns. So the first letter to finance in front of you is a request to repurpose Parks Division capital funds for a brush cutter. So originally within the 2018 budget, there was an approval of $10,000 to purchase a brush cutter, not only for our multi-use trails and really truly maintain those and push back the necessary brush, but also all of our tree lines throughout all of our eight parks and parkways. What we found out through truly investigating brush cutters is, especially with ditch lines and how they're configured, we really needed to beefen up the attachment to our tractor in order to make sure that we do the job that we intend to do without going back and doing rework or not do it to quality standards. So after we received updated quotes on the one that specifically we need, it was more than we originally thought. So the new quote for this brush cutter attachment is $25,073. But we do have a remaining balance of a little over 15 grand in our mower replacement capital improvement budget, and we already bought the necessary mowers for this year. So we do have a remaining balance that I'd like to transfer from our mowers into purchase this brush cutter. So no additional funds would be necessary. It's just more so moving over from our mower account and the surplus we have into this brush cutter fund. So that's the first one.
Will the heavy brush cutter also fulfill the needs of the original heavy brush cutter?
Yes.
And then, if that's the case, will there be a higher cost of maintenance for that heavy brush cutter versus the original one?
The biggest difference between the two is the articulating arm. In order to go out and expand about 14 feet in order to get beyond the culverts. So it's more so not only the reach and expanding and articulating where you need it, but that's the main difference between the two of them. So when it comes to your general maintenance, there's not much of a difference between the actual
just better apparatus. Than,
correct.
It's gonna cost us a little more, but we have the money for it. Is what
correct.
You're saying.
It does.
We're not gonna next year ask for the original brush cutter because this heavy duty one can't get into nooks and crannies that we need it to, right?
This will do everything and then some.
Thank you.
Okay, the next one is repurpose Parks Division capital funds for the use of Silver Lake and Petrifying Springs restroom renovations. So when we had a little bit of our warm winter, we were able to actually go out and redo our Fox River restroom septic system next to restroom number 3. And we found that we were able to save quite a bit of funds. We originally had $50,000 approved within the capital funds for this project. But since we don't have a high usage rate, and after talking to the contractors, we were able to go with a smaller scale sanitary septic system, which when you go to commercial to more of a residential style, because it's a lower usage area, that only costs us a little over $8,000 to do that project. So last year we actually found out late in the year that we had an infiltration of sediments over at Silver Lake Park and one of our shelters on the top of the hill. And over at Silver Lake Park, we only have one deep well for all three restroom facilities, and that's all the way at the bottom by the lake. So we literally pump water all the way up the hill to two other bathrooms and use a booster pump to get that water all the way to where we have infiltration problems at that restroom facility. So after we did a pretty extensive investigation through our off season, we went through a cost analysis on different variables to rerun that line from our booster pump where we know there is no infiltration to where we know there is. That's about 2,200 linear feet, and that would be $61,000 to redo that line. So the most economical, and also to make my staff happy, to be honest, would be to actually put a well up on top, because you can only imagine the amount of maintenance to get that water going on an annual basis. So that project is estimated at $32,000. An additional project would be over at Petrifying Springs Park in restroom number 2. That facility is over 50 years old with original plumbing, believe it or not, that is in desperate need to be upgraded. So that's an additional project that would truly help our staff in ongoing maintenance, because those pipes do rupture every year, and so we're nickel and diming ourselves to death with this restroom. So with those, it's a request to transfer the remaining balance of the Fox River Park septic system repairs into those two separate projects. Is there any questions on those?
Is it going to cover the amount, or is this going to be paid for?
Okay. They will cover that within the budget. So no additional funds would be necessary. It's just a transfer.
Okay.
All right. So next thing we have is our resolution authorizing removal of the old Bristol Town Hall to the Bristol, Wisconsin Historical Society. So I thank all the rest of the folks from the Historical Society in attendance. And this has been an ongoing project since the previous director, John Rudy. So I couldn't even tell you how many years the two organizations have been working together with fundraising and trying to make this Bristol Town Hall transferred over to its new location. So in front of you is a resolution to take this town hall constructed back in 1870 and transfer it to the Bristol, Wisconsin Historical Society. There is no expense to Kenosha County for the transfer of this town hall. That's all going to be done through the not-for-profit organization. And they're actually giving us a dollar for it. So I think we're making up pretty good. And this will go to a location where they can actually use it for educational purposes for the community. So we're looking for a vote to move this resolution forward.
Any questions? I don't know if a lot of you are even familiar with.
No.
It's over by the Pringle Nature Center. Only
I have some. I have a stack of pictures. I guess I'll start with you.
On Highway C.
It's in Pringle.
It's right off of Highway C.
And we have put a new roof on it every once in a while. We've spent a lot of time and money and weed whacking and everything around it. So it's a beautiful thing for the history of Bristol, and it's a very good thing for Kenosha County, because we will not have to maintain it, and it's going to be in a place that it belongs. And there is a group of people, and this wasn't a small effort, that have put together a lengthy effort and raised a lot of money to get this done. It's certainly not the first time I've seen these faces. And some of them know my mother because she taught them. But is there any questions from anyone? Yeah, Supervisor Bosch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just out of curiosity, assuming this gets approved, when is the building going to get moved? And who's actually doing the moving?
Some
professional contractor that moves buildings for a living.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but April is a plan for when this will be moved.
Mid-April.
And that would be, I think they received quotes previously as far as who would be moving that facility, and they would have all the proper insurance, liability, even when it's on county property, make sure that we're covered on our stands from that moving company.
Just out of curiosity, was there anybody local that bid on moving the building?
Or there was no local. There was
Madison, Milwaukee.
Elkhorn was about as local as we could get.
Is that who you're using?
Yep.
The group at Elkhorn?
Yeah, there was two bids that came in at about five people. One was in Indiana, one was in Elkhorn.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just curious, what happens to the existing plant, grass?
We would be restoring that. It's just basically left with the foundation.
Sure.
Motion by Supervisor Wendell. Seconded by?
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Rankle. I looked at Supervisor Gilmore, but I know she's on the committee, so.
I'm going to excuse myself from the vote.
She's going to excuse herself from this vote because she is, she's helped in this project. So, Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
And note that Supervisor Gilmore is excusing herself from the vote.
Great. The next resolution, this resolution is authorizing the Director of Parks to apply for grant funding from the DNR, which will be used to make habitat improvements to Katy Park. So just as we talked about earlier with Clement's example, this authorizes us to apply for a grant through the DNR, and this is through the Wisconsin Habitat Partnership Fund through the DNR to basically restore 30 acres of prairie restoration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Matt.
Oh, that's okay. So that would be 30 acres of prairie restoration and 1 year maintenance on the western side of Katy Park. So that was our second acquisition of Katy Park back in 2008, I believe. So not much work has been done on that western side as far as development goes. So this would give us a good opportunity to start to take more ownership and restore native prairie within 30 acres through this grant opportunity. The total estimated cost is $57,000, of which 25% or $14,250 would be Kenosha County match. And the matching would is included in the county budget, so there's no additional funds needed for this grant opportunity.
Any questions? If not, again, we have a motion. Supervisor O'Day. Moved by Supervisor O'Day.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Franco. Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
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 Aye. Take care.
All right. And the last thing I have is my division report. So the first thing I'll pass around is a pretty cool award that we received from the state DNR. And this was the 2018 Award for Innovation in Urban Forestry in Wisconsin Award. And that was through the DNR, and we received it a couple weeks ago up in Green Bay. So this was in regards to, I'm sure many of the committee members remember about the Emerald Ash Borer project throughout the park system, where we had to remove over 4,000 ash trees. So this award basically recognizes the county on the cost effectiveness, the efficiencies, and how the county really dealt with the ash trees afterwards and how we were able to repurpose the material. So this award basically shows that our project is now renowned on a state level and beyond, that the state really recognizes the efficiencies of this program and are hoping that other communities truly reflect what we have done on a local level. So it was truly an award to go up there and receive this award, and John Rudy and the rest of the administration in the past really did a fantastic job with this project, and now is recognized on that state level.
Well done.
Thank you. So as far as park projects go, just an update with Kemper Center, Lakefront Studios. Everything is progressing as it should, and they're set for completion at the end of March. For the Pets JR parking lot expansion, that was part of the 2018 budget, you can see an attached site plan. That is an expansion project. That's the only parking lot that was not redone with the entire parkway when the parkway was done several years ago. So this basically finalizes the full Petrifying Springs Park parking lot expansion. And it goes from 60 existing parking stalls to to 110, so we're truly expanding, making more use out of that parking lot up on the top. So bids for that project are due at the end of March on the 29th, and then the project is going to be completed, or shall be completed, at the end of June, on June 30th of 18. The next project we have going is the roof replacement and maintenance. We have 5 roofs set to be replaced over at Kemper Center. Also, we have 14 different roofs that are going to be maintained, just to make sure that we continue to get a little bit more shelf life out of these things if they're just better maintained. So hopefully that'll expand their useful life. And then on the park side, we have three separate roofs that are set to be replaced. So construction documents were completed, and then bids are going to be out this week on Wednesday. They're going to be due back on the 28th for Kemper and the 29th for Silver Lake Park and Pets. And those projects, we're going to give them a little bit more of a window just so they become more competitive in nature. But they're going to be, they should be completed before the end of October of this year. The next project we have is the Pike River Restoration Phase 1. I kind of gave an attached overview just so you guys have a general idea that this is happening on the north section of the Pike River within Petrifying Springs Park. But it, just as a refresher, this is an $800,000 project that's going to be kicking off roughly June 1st of this year. The great note about that is it's only 12.5% county funded, so a majority of that is funded through EPA and Fund for Lake Michigan. So this is a total of 3,100 linear feet, so a little over a half a mile of restoration work that's going to be done this summer. The project includes stream bank stabilization and wetland restoration, which includes grading banks, adding toe revetments, soil lifts, in-stream features including J-hooks, rock riffles, rock clusters, deflectors, log veins, and that truly helps out our fish habitat as well as protecting our banks. And over the long duration of that, it'll really help out with our flooding and stormwater events, so we minimize our erosion in the future. So in regards to planting, over 8 acres of prairie seeds will be planted, 6,100 emergent plugs, 4,600 live stakes, 44 trees, and 102 shrubs will be part of that project. So permits were submitted, final construction documents are finished, bids are anticipated to be out in March, and like I say, we'll be starting in June. Next project we have is the KD Park Trails. We're moving forward with phase 1. The bid was awarded to Yankee General Contractors. We have the pre-construction meeting is on the 15th of this month, and just had a conversation where they anticipate to start at the end of March and even early April. So that one's going to be moving pretty quickly. And the bids mandated that they were going to be completed, or they should be completed by July 1st. Next project is Fox River Park Playground. Again, there's an attached plan for the new playground equipment over at Fox River Park. Just a reminder that playground that's out there right now is from 1937, so this will be a well-needed playground for Fox River Park. So construction will start with excavation in early April, and the project, to my estimates, will be done by June of this year. Next is Kemper sidewalk replacement. We're replacing approximately 60 sidewalk slabs in 2018. That's part of our annual $50,000 that we had collaborated with Kemper Center. So the county oversees these projects now. So we're working with this project with the city to bid on that to reduce the sidewalk costs. So we think we'll get a more competitive bid if we can tap onto the city program. So that's slated for this year. The last project is a Silver Lake Park solar panel and credit card payments. So we've been working closely with our facilities department to install solar panels at our FIBU station and connect our Wi-Fi so we can accept credit cards on the entrances, because unfortunately we have to turn a lot of people away that they just, no one has cash, including me anymore. So this is a benefit to our customers, and also just streamlines things with our kayak rentals, canoe rentals, and any other water features that we have. So we should be ready to go by Memorial Day weekend. Next thing we have is Narcan training. I don't know if everyone's familiar with Narcan, but with the opioid overdose epidemic that's hitting our whole entire country, the parks are definitely in the public eye as well. And unfortunately, it's one of those things that we do want to prepare ourselves for in case there is an overdose within our park system. So all of our full-time staff and even some seasonals on their own personal time were interested in being trained on how to utilize Narcan to reverse the effects of an opioid overdose. So it's one of those things that I'm proud that we're part of it, but I hope that we never have to use it. So yeah, now our staff has the necessary product on hand.
So where's it going?
So the staff will be carrying the Narcan on their person?
Correct.
What happens if they come in contact with fentanyl or something? I know there's officers that are trained, highly trained, to deal with this type of thing, and they're overdosing on it. How are we going to protect our employees?
That's a good question. So we were trained. That was a part of our training, and we did discuss that specific issue on what to do, what the symptoms are, because it can go even through protective gloves with that, even a small dosage. So there was training, and to be honest, even without administering Narcan, our employees could be in contact with that without even knowing too. So this is just another educational component just to better our staff, to make them even aware, because before we even had that meeting, we wouldn't even known what that product was, let alone how to deal with it or what those symptoms were. So I still think it was a benefit to go through that training. And if it comes down to it that our staff truly does not feel comfortable, they can call 911 and they don't have to do it, and it's still their choice, or they're protected under the Good Samaritan Clause as well. So I see it still as a benefit to better equip and better bring knowledge to our workforce about the reality of what we have to work around.
I'm not saying that's not a good thing to do. I just, you know, are they going to be carrying like little kits with the gloves and all that with them?
It's a great question, and we did ask them too. And they're looking into not only, like you say, the kits, but Narcan can only be kept at basically room temperature. And I said, well, our guys work out in extremes. We're out in hot vehicles below freezing. So right now, we maybe can't carry it all the times that we want to based on the extremes. So the Department of Health and Human Services is going back to the grant where they received the funds to do this, these training sessions, and are hopefully creating more of a kit that it's a grab-and-go bag that you can keep inside, like their service yard. And anytime they go out, they can keep like a climate-controlled bag of some sort.
Was there any resistance by your staff at all to get this training?
I am surprised. I thought I would definitely get resistance for it. And as I stated, more people showed up than I even intended to. That we have night patrol staff that work alone, and when they heard about this, they wanted to be part of that training.
Yeah, I wanted to piggyback, because Matt and I talked before we even did this, because the health department has a grant to do this and extend the training. And I said, boy, you know, I don't really want to force this on our parks guys if they're not comfortable. When Matt approached them, they were like, absolutely, we want to do this. It was they over the top. I mean, I was concerned for them that we put this on them, and it was just the opposite. They wanted.
Were you trained as well?
I personally was, yes.
Okay. Did they discuss how lethal this stuff is? That's why I asked if there was resistance, because I had a little bit of training today, in fact, on this, and how just the smallest amount can kill you.
Yeah.
So that's why I just wanted to, I haven't been through that training, because I'm in a different world, of course, but I was just wondering if they really drove that point home, how serious this is, if it gets on them, or if they inhale it.
Correct. They did. And like I say, it's kind of scary that we deal with garbage, debris, we got to pick this stuff up, and there's definitely a risk to doing so. So yeah, it's good. It was a good training just to make us aware, and I'm sure there will be future trainings as if this obviously is going the direction it is. Unfortunately for all of our communities, we're going to probably need more training than this.
Were you referring to the fentanyl or the Narcan?
The fentanyl.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Not the treatment, but if they come in contact with it, how dangerous it could be for them.
Yeah.
So you're right, Good Samaritan
I mean, I would administer it too. I'm not saying don't do it. I just hope they are aware of what they are volunteering to do.
Correct. There was a lot of questions, okay, even with the Narcan, because my staff going into it, they're like, well, what if I get Narcan? It's kind of funny, but it's a true concern. What if I squeeze it and it gets on me or in my eye? But there's no side effects. It's not going to do any negativity if you administer Narcan. Even if someone's having a heart attack and you don't know, you're not a doctor, you're not going to be able to properly diagnose them. If you administer Narcan to anyone, it's not going to have a negative occurrence to them. So I thought that was a benefit and reassured our staff that, hey, at least you can administer this and you're not going to do anything worse than what's already occurring. And they do the same in the ER too.
Are we aware of how many overdoses are taking place in the county parks? Is this something that has become highly prevalent, or?
So we kind of talked about that too. We're at this point pretty gifted that we aren't, because I got a nephew that works for La Crosse County Park System, and it is, for the past year, it's been insane. They're dealing with hypos that they find all over the park system, and they overdoses. It's like, and when I talked to Matt, our situation here is luckily much, much better than that. We have, I don't believe, any knowledge of any specific thing. We've had, you know, questionable things that we found, but I don't believe we had a documented kind of situation that we're aware of, but I could be wrong.
There was one that I received, John Rudy and myself just went to Fox River Park, and fortunately the sheriffs were already there. It was already called in by a constituent, but someone did OD in their car, so it can happen. It did happen. So again, I think that parks are public places, and you got obviously all the benefits, but it can bring in situations like this too.
Okay.
We'll wait for the discussion.
Oh, that is good.
A couple of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The sidewalk replacement, you're going to collaborate with the city to get better pricing. I think that's fabulous, but we're not piggybacking on their program, right? If we're going to collaborate and get good pricing, we're still going to have our own separate contract, and they're going to do our work separate from the sidewalk program.
It's probably, most likely, to my knowledge, it is going to be part of the sidewalk program. So
okay.
I met with Brandon Dahl from the city, who administers that program, and Kemper Center is going to be included with the sidewalk program. So therefore, it'll be invoiced in 2019 after the work is done, most likely.
Okay. Any guarantees on work getting done at a certain time? And I'm tiptoeing around this because I've had experience with the sidewalk program, and it's wonderful, but my experience has been it's been somewhat haphazardly done, and not always does project that you start with get completed. So I guess my concern is that, you know, we might get kicked to the back of the line.
I did contact Brandon about a week ago and still waiting for a response back. So that's kind of my job, and that's why I'm thankful to be more of the administrator for Kemper Center with these projects, that we can keep a pulse on these.
Sure.
And make sure and reassure everyone that if we plan on doing something, we're doing it, we're the oversight of it, and we're gonna do it with those quality standards.
Pike River Restoration, has there been any discussion or concern about any impact that Foxconn may have upon the Pike River at this section? I asked that because I was involved in a meeting last week where there was quite a bit of discussion about, you know, the Kilbourne Ditch and Summers and the southern branch of the Pike River, that there are some questions that have not really been answered as to how stormwater runoff is going to be handled. So is there any concern about this restoration and how that 1,500 acres of impervious surface may affect this?
Ray and I had a long discussion about this, and so Ray can answer that.
It's one piece of the big puzzle that we're talking about with the DOT and the Department of Administration. To answer the first part, I don't think
if we do everything, if we keep pushing what it is we're pushing for the two watersheds that are affected by the Foxconn development, the Des Plaines and the Pike, there's two, and some of the, like Clement sits on the utility group, he goes every Thursday when they have meetings, he goes to those meetings that are part, that are run by the DOT and the Department of Administration. There's then two other subgroups. One has to do with the highway projects, he sits on those as well. There's a whole other one having to do with stormwater management that Andy Bueller sits on. And so Jim is really, the county exec is really plugged into this because we've got, we're basically been trying to negotiate a memorandum of understanding on the highway piece of this thing that is close but not there yet. But the piece that Jim's bolted on is this whole water thing for exactly the concerns that you're talking about, because the amount of water that is now, there's going to be an impervious surface over a heck of a lot of acreage, and they're just now really starting to get their hands around what the amount of water that's going to have to be warehoused and released in a way so it doesn't negatively impact the Pike River nor the Des Plaines. So all that stuff is getting, it's kind of all in process right now. Can I tell you that we're going to end up in a spot where it's not going to negatively impact this? I'd like to say yeah, but there's a lot of stuff that's out of our control at this point. But I can tell you that, Jim, this is really something, because it's actually really ticking off the Department of Administration and the DOT. They were hoping to have this thing done probably a month ago, and Jim has not given up on the water part of it.
I'm really glad to hear that, because I've said this on a number of occasions. It almost feels as if, as an outsider looking in, that you know, we down here to the south might get forgotten if people aren't beating the drum and yelling and kicking and screaming. And as I'm sure everybody remembers, last July, I know that west of the interstate got it bad, but you know, east of the interstate by where, you know, the first industrial park is in the summers, you know, that's where the southern branch of the Pike River comes into play. And many of us know former alderman that now lives over there and probably saw his house basically getting flooded. And that's before this 1,500 acres of impervious surface that's going to directly affect this whole area. So I have a really hard time believing that unless we're beating the drum, that we're not going to have, you know, some big water runoff problems. Yeah, but my main concern was with this northern section. We're doing all these improvements, and do we have any idea as to whether or not that, you know, that there we may be adversely affected or not? I'm hearing, we kind of think no, but stay tuned.
Right, we're in the process of doing what's necessary to protect that stuff. I think what Mount Pleasant did already, north of KR, is a huge advantage to that whole watershed because of how they've created, you know, this great
all that stuff, you know, their own
right.
Restoration.
Yeah, so all of that, this is all kind of tying together. I can only tell you that, yeah, where the county exec's at on this, he's just, because we're already talking with them. We just had a meeting Friday with this group up in Mount Pleasant, and we said, you know, not only once it's settled on what the design is, we're going to have, you know, proof of concept stuff so that, okay, how do we test this afterwards to see that it's actually the way it was designed, it's actually performing the way it was designed. Let's, you know, so I'm confident we're going to get a good chunk of that stuff, if not all of it, negotiated in so we can protect those watersheds.
Cool.
Thanks.
Yeah, just to add to the non, even the county is also got the Sewer Park is also involved.
Oh, yes.
So Sewer Park is doing all the analysis, which is an independent body doing the analysis to make sure that we meet our requirements.
And for full disclosure, I sit on Sewer PAC and I'm on the Planning and Research Commission. So that,
okay.
And thanks for mentioning that. And I kind of got the same answer from them, is that at this stage we don't know, but we did a study a number of years ago that suggests, you know, as long as you release water, and I forget what the increment is, and you know, I'm not sure how you can measure that based off of, you know, 1,500 acres of farmland versus, you know, 1,500 acres of concrete. I mean, I just don't, it seems like apples don't have oranges. Anyway.
Math is our friend.
Yeah. Let's hope so.
Well, math and sunshine are your
friends. Sunshine is our better friend, yes.
So, I know we're probably done with this, but to put it into it, Ray has to say nice things like the state is peeved that we haven't. But I can say that if it was up to them, our county executive would have signed all their paperwork weeks ago. But he is saying no until we know what's happening with the water. We're not giving up control of KR and that lake. So that's where it sits right now.
Good.
And so this has been, that I've been asking all the time, we got that done, we got that done, we got that done. No. But we're not rushing it. They want us to rush it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Thank you.
Yes. Couple points of clarification, small and easy. Regarding the Kemper sidewalk, mm-hmm. Is that the interior part of the property or along the parallel to the road?
Parallel to 3rd Street.
Parallel, okay.
Or so Prairie Avenue, sorry.
Okay. And then regarding the Fox River playground, and I don't know if you touched on this before, just refresh my memory. Is any of that playground equipment such that children or people with special needs can use it as well?
Good question. So the access to the actual playground is going to be ADA accessible.
Okay.
So what from the parking lot, it's going to be wood fiber for the base material.
So what is it?
It's wood chips.
Okay. Well, a wheelchair really couldn't go on.
It could. It's graded for a wheelchair. It's like basically down here as far as ADA accessibility, but it's still accessible.
Okay.
And then you can have like the Dream Playground with what's called Pour in Place PIP. That's like the top of the line for ADA accessibility. But still what we're doing still meets those requirements for ADA accessibility.
Okay.
And some of the features, yeah, you have to climb up there and utilize it. So it depends on the accessibility and the range, but the kids are able to gain access to the playground, play some of the features on there.
Thank you.
And I guess if I could finish off
a
couple other things. upcoming events, I'm not going to list them all because they're on your report, but a couple are worth mentioning. On the 17th, we got a St. Patrick's Day Leprechaun and Lederhosen 0.1K run walk, so the flyer is attached for that one. So even if you're not that physically fit, highly recommend to go to that one because it does benefit the Boys and Girls Club of Kenosha. So that should be a fun one. Next, just as an FYI, August 11th, we're actually reintroducing Picnic in the Park. The first picnic in the park happened 30 years ago from 2018. So it's kind of a cool thing that we're reviving this year. So similar in context to our anniversary party, just on a smaller scale, but over at Petrifying Springs Park. So right now we're currently working on sponsorships because it worked out great that it wasn't all 100% county funds to put on that event, that a bulk of that was through corporate and private sponsors. So we're well on our way to making that historic event happen again. And that is all I have.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in golf operations, we're following our business plan. We're getting ready for the 2018 season. We're getting all of our leagues signed up. We were able to make room for one more league, actually, at Petrifying Springs, so we'll be going out and advertising that. And Brightdale, we signed a new league at both golf courses. And so Brightdale still has some availability. It's just harder to get people to travel out there for a weekly evening league, but we're going to have over 400 league players again this year, which is great. We went to the Chicago Golf Show. It was unbelievably busy. It was just 24,000 attendees at that golf show, and we gave away 3,750 coupons. We talked to many, many people. I think we're going to probably get three different outings out of that. I got some good interest in memberships and daily fees, a lot of positive comments that, you know, that's my favorite golf course. Oh, I love that place. I grew up playing there. You know, it was really a good recognition for the golf courses. So we're looking forward to the Milwaukee Golf Show, which will be St. Patrick's Day weekend, the 16th through the 18th. And hopefully we have as much success. Usually we even give out more coupons there. I mean, 6,000 coupons for Milwaukee. So looking forward to going up there. We're working with Golf Now, Golf Channel Solutions. It's an affiliate of NBC, you know, a lot of people are using Golf Now to book tee times. We're looking to, we've had very much success improving our websites and booking engine through them. We're actually looking at them right now for a food and beverage buying program. We signed a letter of intent to purchase through U.S. Foods. We've had some of our invoices from last year analyzed and found a substantial savings going through this buying program. It's a really large buying program, so we're hoping that we can save some money there. And we're also signing up with them to do our branding and social media monitoring and really help us out with all of our email blasts and monitoring Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and other social media aspects. And I'm really excited about working with them on all of that. And I think it could have a huge impact, positive impact on our revenue, getting, you know, younger people involved that are on, you know, these media outlets that we haven't been using in the past. So I'm hoping that is real positive for us. Our superintendent at Brightdale Links has resigned after a 36-year career. We wish him good luck, but we were very happy that we were able to promote from within Tom O'Dell. He was our assistant superintendent for the last several years, and he was promoted to our superintendent. Brings a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. I think it'll be a very positive getting him, giving him the reins and seeing what that he can do. We also had a long-term seasonal, Randy Schultz, that was a local farmer and cattle grower around here. He's been working with us for 9 years as a long-term seasonal, and we were able to promote him to our assistant superintendent. So a lot of positive energy and good things coming out of that shop already, and we really look forward to having them, you know, take the reins, like they said, and control the golf course and the maintenance and see where they can go from here with it. So until today we were targeting next week for opening, but after this weather, I don't know. We're still opening at some time next week. The weather gets better and we're able to open. We've prepared a press release and we're going to be opening the Blue Spruce first in Petrifying Springs. And then, you know, the rest of Brightdale and the range will open. Our practice range is always really the last thing that we get to open just because, you know, it's got very poor drainage. But what we're working on is the refresh of both clubhouses, deep cleaning. We had a mold problem at Petrifying Springs, and we had some good help from facilities. They came and encapsulated all that and did a ton of painting and really have put the clubhouse back in shape. I mean, we were just walking around today. We're looking at the possibility of putting in a gas log in there for a gas fireplace instead of having wood and having to supply that with wood all the time. And you know, it's just such a pleasure being there. I mean, that's just such a cool building, a 1936 Work Progress Administration building. So, you know, really doing a lot of refreshing on the clubhouses and then ordering all of our supplies, equipment, and merchandise for the year. We have quite a bit of merchandise ordered. Our big purchase will be our mowing equipment, and we're getting a new bucket tractor at Brightdale. And we also ordered the new Yamaha Quiet Ride golf cars, which are, they're 2 decibels louder than an electric golf car, and they're gas powered, and they're really, I think, best best card on the market right now. They're also coming out with a new, really cool looking utility vehicle that we're going to have as our beverage cart. It looks like a, you know, like a Razor or a four wheel, and you know, we're going to get four of those, three at Brightondale and one at Petrifying Springs. And I think it'll make a statement on the golf course when the people come up and selling wet food and beverage to our guests. So a lot of good positive things happening for us in the golf division.
Just one little addition to that, to show everybody the type of people that we have working for Kenosha County, that our the assistant superintendent that we're filling that position for with him. He worked, what, for us for 9 years so far, part-time?
Yeah.
He's a farmer, local farmer. They offer him this job and find out he's got a four-year agronomy degree from University of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've got some quality people filling these part-time positions, and how hard it is sometimes for them to want to stay local and to be part of the community in here. What a beautiful thing for us and for him. Yes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The coupons that you were handing out, what are they for? Like $5 off or $10 off, or what are they about?
We have up until May 24th, a coupon that is good for $29. It's $18 for 18 holes. If you walk, another $11 if you want to ride. It's good any day until, you know, while the weather is bad and while we need to create some demand for the golfers to come out. We also had a summer coupon on there. It's weekdays for $29 for 18 holes of the cart, or weekends for $39.
Did you do the same thing last year?
Yes.
What kind of response, you know, out of the 3,000 or so, how many took us up on?
You know, we don't get a real ton of response from Chicago, but from Milwaukee we get, you know, I don't have specific numbers for you, but we do get, you know, we coded them specially for Chicago and Milwaukee.
So
show.
You know which is
right, and you know, it's one of our biggest promotions is that $29 weekday rate. You know, we've been using that for quite a while. We're going to try boosting that rate on our coupons to like 33. We're having our senior rate being our lowest rate this year. So we still went to the golf shows with this low rate because we want to try and increase that new participation in our facilities. We're trying to draw people from a little bit farther away, but our most of our discounts on our website and different avenues that we do in the newspapers and stuff will be trying to use that $33 senior rate for the year.
Thanks.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
For the like Yamaha like golf carts and stuff, and then also the food beverage cart, that was coming out of the like money that the county had put aside for like new golf cart replacements, right?
Correct. That was in the budget. We were budgeted $200,000. We're replacing 71. Well, actually, we're replacing 66 golf cars. We're adding, and we're getting 71. We're adding 5 additional golf cars because we've been running out of carts at Petrifying Springs. So that fleet will be increased. And then the beverage carts, we roll over about every 4 years just because they take a constant beating. They're out there every day, you know, driving the courses all day long, and so they need to be replaced.
Anything else for Dana?
I can just add one more thing. I mean, you know, currently we're down about 6 maintenance workers at Brightondale Links, you know, so we are going through definitely some challenging staffing times, you know, right now. You know, we're just kind of getting the maintenance people back. We haven't really, because we need to get ready for the course opening, but we haven't really even investigated so much as our food and beverage and rangers and the golf shop should be pretty good at Brightondale. We're down like 3 at Petrifying Springs, so we're already starting to see the effects of the growing economy around here on our workers.
Bye. My wife wondered why I went giggling into the house today because I got a response on that. You know, I mean, you just don't get it. It used to drive me nuts when I put a man at the job center. I'd get calls all day. She said, "What's that?" I said, "Oh, don't bother me right now. It's that hard. It's horrible."
I went through 50 applications last week. I picked out 20. We called them. We got 2 responses.
Two?
Two.
Yeah.
So.
Same on parks.
Yeah, I don't. It's bad. Yeah. Anything else for Dan? All right. Thank you, Dan. We'll move on to Mike.
I had 79, and I interviewed 10. Only 6 showed up. Same thing, if not worse. Starting with the Focus on Energy project list, 2 figures were plugged in that were missing on the project at the county center here for upgrading interior lighting to LED for the warm and cold storage buildings. The annual savings calculation came in at $5,218, and the payback is 2.1 years. That's a figure that we supply data to the Focus on Energy engineer, and then he gets it back to us. So that's a very worthwhile project. That's all for that list. Moving on to ongoing projects. At KCDC, we got the UPS replacement project. It's been going on since right after the holiday. Finally, our in-house electrician is done with his rewiring. So all we're looking at now is formal startup and commissioning by a factory tech from Eaton, and that's scheduled in a week. And after that, the project will be complete. So if everything goes well, we'll be good with that one, and it won't be on the list next month. Second project is the parking ramp waterproofing project. We're working on the spec on that. We had a non-mandatory pre-bid meeting held on the 27th of February, and 4 contractors showed up, and 2 others submitted spec questions. They've been answered, and now bids are due on March 13th. That's all I've got. Yes, sorry.
All right, Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Public safety building addition, second floor project. Last agency, we're getting the area ready as the medical examiner. If you remember the medical examiner, we gutted out the old fleet maintenance area on the west side of the building. And that's been challenging to turn that area into just like a hospital grade kind of autopsy laboratory room with offices, but we're getting it done, and we're planning to move them in the week of March 19th. And we're looking good for that. All the other agencies are in place, and things seem to be working well. Just a few punch list items here. There's no questions on that. Now I'll move on to the public safety building and pre-trial roof replacement project. We had a mandatory pre-bid walkthrough on February 22nd. We had 9 contractors attend. We were happy with that turnout. Again, we moved all of these bids for roofing right to the closer to the beginning of the year, and that seems to have worked really well for our attendance and getting bids. Our bids are due on March 8th. No questions on that. I'll move on to the Anderson House Preservation Project. We had an initial project scoping out meeting to define the parameters of the project. The focus will be on developing specifications for restoring the building's exterior envelope, the roof, the walls, the windows, etc., and the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing inside the building, heating and cooling. We're targeting having the bids ready in September of this year. A lot of engineering is going to go into this. The exterior, the walls, stone walls, stucco, clay tiles for the roof, and the windows all are in desperate need to be restored. And if you remember, we did the exact same thing with the courthouse exterior and with KCAB exterior to make them really watertight, because the more water that's getting in there over the years, the more damage you occur, and then your costs for restoring it start going up like that. So it needs it this time. That's it.
Any questions for Frank? All right, sir. Great.
Brooks signed, we are officially in the home stretch. All building construction activities are substantially complete. Final cleaning of the building is pretty much complete as well.
Supervisor O'Day, I think you guys had a trustees meeting today, and we've got a tour tomorrow scheduled. I know the chairman of the Brookside Trustees, Mr. Pitts, wanted to have a, and we had a list of them, as because all the county board folks are invited as well, and it could be a quorum, so we had to publicly list it. So tomorrow it's from 5 to 6:30 at Brookside. I believe that we're having folks meet on the east side of the building. Did you guys talk about it? Okay, you
no.
Go. Okay. I believe we're going to meet on the east side. We'll probably have folks on both sides of the building so we can get everybody where we need to go. But the focus will be on the renovated area because the plan is to move folks in. Next week, the 13th, is when we'll actually start to move folks back in. We got occupancy from the city, not last week, but the week before. So everything's been signed off from the city's end. And then we had the state inspector come through Friday, just a few days ago. And we've got a few little odds and ends because they always seem to find a few things. Most of the things he found were from 1995 that have been in the same way since 1995, but they're things he wants now changed, which is kind of par for the course. But there wasn't anything he found that wasn't something we couldn't fix this week yet. So we're going to get everything dialed in from the state so that we can still go ahead next week and move on the 13th. Anybody that's been in the 1995 Brookside, and if they go in there now, it'll be a mind-blowing experience. It will be. It was, when I saw it on paper, as I think I've said to the committee, you know, you see it on paper, and I knew we were going to do some pretty significant refreshing, but it seems like it's a completely new building. What it is we did, even though in the resident rooms we didn't change anything other than paint, flooring, and kind of just basically that was it in there. The ceilings are even the same, but in the hallways, the original floor laminate flooring is still in place. But you just got to come and check it out. It's really amazing what the building looks like, and it looks like it was built the same time as the new construction was built. The architects did a wonderful job of, you know, doing what they do, and it really is. It'll be something to be proud of. So we'll end up at the end of the day, whereas we had 154 beds prior to the project, there's 178 beds now, but there's a different mix of patients. So it'll be 106 people are skilled nursing. 24 beds are. Assisted living or CBRF, community-based residential facility, which is a whole new market for Brookside, and then 48 are designated as rehab beds. So it's a different mix, and we're up. It'll be up, and if anybody can go to the thing before the county board meeting tomorrow night, I would highly recommend it. Because it'll be, the architects will be there, the construction team will be there. It'll be a good chance to see what it looks like before we start to move folks in next week. That's pretty much it on Brookside. As you can tell from all the reports tonight from all the division heads, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of projects going on in every division has a lot going on. Everything should make all the divisions run more efficiently and just be that much better by the end of the year once these projects are completed. We are nervous a bit about construction prices. We'll see. We'll get some insight in some roofing things in the next couple weeks. And then Matt's got some other construction. It's going to be interesting to see just what the impact is. Hoping that we're still on the front end of this and we can still get some good pricing on the projects. But we're going to know in the next couple months, it's going to become clear. KCDC storage building is fully functional. Only a bit of site work remains to be completed when the weather improves. But the sheriff has moved into that building. Everything is working really well. That's pretty much it.
Any questions for Ray? Alrighty then. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I'll keep with you.